Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. As you may already know, from the 5th to the 10th of January, I travelled with a delegation of bishops from Europe and North America on their 13th annual pilgrimage of solidarity to the Christians of the Holy Land. A pilgrimage which ended with an appeal for peace in the region. In their final statement, in fact, the bishops remarked that the people in the region are living through dark and dramatic events, such as the conflict in Gaza and southern Israel, civil war in Syria, and increasing polarization within Israel and Palestine. While last week I brought you the voices of some of the European and American bishops taking part in the annual event, some of the Catholics I met there who are involved in social work, as well as some of the reports I filed from the Holy Land, this week I'd like you to meet the Apostolic Nuncio to Israel, Archbishop Giuseppe Lazzarotto, some of the local bishops, Patriarchal Vicar of Jerusalem William Shomali, Melkite Archbishop Elias Shakur, one of the bishops from the Holy Land Coordination, Frenchman Michel Dubost. But first of all, the British Consul General in Jerusalem, Sir Vincent Fine. While I was there, Sir Vincent Fine met with the delegation of bishops, stressing the urgency of the situation on the ground because of Israeli settlement expansion, which he said is developing at such a pace and threatens the concept of a two-state solution that is widely supported by the international community. I asked him about his hopes for the prospect of a negotiated two-state solution, which I just heard him tell the bishops both sides want, but neither side believes in anymore.
I believe that the majority of the peoples, both the Palestinian people and the people of Israel, want a two-state solution. Certainly that's the aspiration of the international community, including the United Kingdom. And our Foreign Secretary, William Hague, is spending time and effort to help to bring that about. We strongly hope that the new US administration under President Obama, Mark II, and Senator Kerry as the Secretary of State will lead the international community in a renewed effort. And that's urgent for year one of the second Obama administration. It's urgent because, in our opinion, settlement expansion, particularly in the West Bank, but also in East Jerusalem, is developing at such a pace that the prospect of the two-state solution is endangered, and in particular, the land contiguity between East Jerusalem and its West Bank hinterland could be interrupted. So year one of the second Obama administration is the big year. That's 2013. We hope and pray that 2013 can be the year of peace between Israelis and Palestinians. Both sets of people need it, and the end of the occupation through negotiations is one of the prime priorities of our government.
Jerusalem is a key piece in the puzzle for the peace process, is it not?
It is. Our policy, and that of the entire European Union, is that Jerusalem is special. Jerusalem needs to be shared, needs to become the shared capital of the State of Israel, living in peace and security with the State of Palestine, with a shared capital, which means that both states have a stake in Jerusalem, and we also believe that freedom of worship in Jerusalem for all faiths, all three of the great monotheistic religions, is essential.
What is the situation of Christians here?
Christians in the Holy Land, I can speak about the Palestinian territories, my area of work. Their situation is the same as that of Muslims, no real difference, the same opportunities for work and difficulties, same travel issues, permit problems. The number of Christians in the Holy Land, in the Palestinian territories, is dwindling. That's a matter for concern. Naturally, people can make their own choices about where their children will have a better life. And the Christian communities in the Palestinian territories have got diaspora links in South America, in Europe, in America itself, which other communities don't have. So they've got more choices to make. But our hope is that the Christian community can be consolidated, and the work of charities like Aid to the Church in Need or Friends of the Holy Land, based in the UK, a joint endeavour by Anglicans and Catholics, can help to ensure that, in particular, housing for Christians in Jerusalem and in the Holy Land writ large, but particularly in Jerusalem, can be made available so that that choice is made easier for them to stay.
Thank you very much. Would you like to add anything?
Only to say that I wish all the listeners of Vatican Radio well, and I am deeply impressed by the deep interest shown by His Holiness in peace in the Holy Land in this year of peace and prayer for peace.
That was Sir Vincent Fine, the British Consul General in Jerusalem. I'd now like to share with you a conversation I had with the Apostolic Nuncio to Israel, Archbishop Giuseppe Lazzarotto, following his meeting with the Bishops of the Holy Land Coordination on January the 8th, a meeting during which he pointed to how both the Israeli and the Palestinian communities are needy of support at an international level, and how the bishop's visit might help towards a better understanding of the current situation on the ground, both within the Middle Eastern region and more specifically in the Holy Land. Following this meeting, I waited patiently to speak to him, and when I got my chance, my first question focused around progress surrounding the fundamental agreement between the Holy See and Israel. Vatican diplomatic relations were established in 1993 in a fundamental accord. The main concerns of the Vatican in Israel are the protection of Latin Rite Catholic churches, properties, assets, and of the holy places. But there's a stumbling block, isn't there?
Well, I wouldn't say there is a stumbling block. We are still negotiating, because the first agreement, as you mentioned, the fundamental agreement, was a sort of a framework, let us say, but it was already agreed at that time that there would have been others agreement for specific issues. So there was already one about legal personalities of the juridical legal personality of bodies and institutions in the church. And now we are negotiating an agreement of economic and fiscal nature. So, you know, the dialogue is still open. We are negotiating, and we hope to reach soon a good conclusion anyway.
But there are still diplomatic tensions, no, in terms of this agreement?
No, well, it depends on the way that it is interpreted, you know. So part of our effort is to make sure that this agreement, even before it is signed or after it will be signed, is be interpreted in the correct way, you know. I wouldn't say tensions, actually. You know, it is important that all parties interested in this agreement have the right idea of the very nature of this agreement, so that it is not interpreted in the wrong way. Let us put it like that. That is the essential point for us. Yes.
You were here 30 years ago, you said. The situation has changed enormously.
Enormously.
What was your impression when you first got here after 30 years?
My impression was that, you know, as I said, the situation has changed because there have been so many things happening in between, let us say, from 30 years ago. And, you know, we have a number of elements which could and should help, like all these agreements that have been signed, the dialogue, the formal diplomatic relations and that we established, and so on. But on the other hand, there were events and circumstances which unfortunately didn't make it easier. And I would refer to the strong appeal launched by the Holy Father on the occasion of the meeting with the diplomatic corps for the new year. The Holy Father launched a very strong appeal for peace, for dialogue, for understanding, so that Jerusalem become what it should be, not a sign of confrontation, but a sign of dialogue and sharing and love, indeed, you know. The city of peace, a symbol for the whole world. This is actually what inspires all our efforts.
Except that when you get here, you find a huge separation wall.
Yes, I saw the wall, and of course that is to be regretted, you know, because we strongly believe, that problems can be solved only through dialogue, you know, and erecting walls in every sense, material sense and also in a spiritual sense, doesn't help. Violence and confrontation have never solved any problems. I've created problems, generated problems which unfortunately remains there, you know, for a long time and makes life much more difficult. So it is towards another direction that we should look, I would say.
On the same morning I spoke to the Apostolic Nuncio Archbishop Giuseppe Lazzarotto, I also had an opportunity to interview the Auxiliary Bishop of Jerusalem, William Shamali, who serves as Vicar General for the Patriarchate. He'd just spoken to the bishops from the Holy Land Coordination about the changing face of Christianity in the Holy Land due to an influx of migrants. So before tackling the issue of interfaith and ecumenical relations between the different churches and religions seeking to promote justice and peace across the troubled region today, I focused on that particular question.
The migrants are more than 200,000. And most of them are Christians. In this sense, we have a majority now of Christians who don't speak Arabic or Hebrew. They come from abroad for a period of time. So in this sense, we don't have one unilateral church speaking Arabic. We have a cosmopolitan church. This is the meaning it changed, the aspect of the church.
It is a recent development.
It's a recent since, let us say, 10 years. Many seek work in Israel because Israel is a developed country, a rich country, and the people who come from the India, Philippines, Sri Lanka or East Europe see an opportunity here to have work and better reward at the end of the month. They come for this reason.
You have some Africans too.
Africans are mainly coming from Sudan as asylum seekers. They try to work for sure. But their status is asylum seeker. It means that they remain here until their problem is solved. As South Sudan got its independence and many of them came from South Sudan, Israel thought that it is time for them to finish their life here and to go back to their country.
You made an interesting statement saying that threatening sometimes helps ecumenism. What did you mean by that?
I meant that during our meetings, the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate, we didn't start our meeting with a prayer. So when we asked the Greek Orthodox Patriarch that we should start praying, but we asked it in a special way, in a strong way, he accepted. So I said, joking, that threatening is helpful, but it is joking. We asked it strongly, let me say. And he accepted finally, which is a good gesture from his part.
So at an ecumenical level, would you say the situation is positive?
Yes, I can say that it's positive since we meet together, we discuss pragmatic issues together, we visit each other for Christmas, Easter, with beautiful speeches filled with theology and also mutual love. I believe that the situation now on an ecumenical level is good. There is more trust than mistrust which prevailed in the past. But that on the theological level, still we have to work hard in order to reach really a theological unity. As I mentioned, the unification of the Feast of Easter is an ecumenical step taken by the Catholic churches in the Holy Land in order to have Easter together, which is vital and existential ecumenism, because ecumenism is not only theological, it can be also social, existential, in the same time.
So you can have Easter together in the Holy Land, but not in Jerusalem and in Bethlehem, is
yes,
that right?
Yes, yes. These exceptions were requested by some of the bishops and the custodes of the Holy Land because of the special character of Jerusalem and the afflux of pilgrims on that period. Now, we can discuss this even, but this is the choice of some of the bishops.
The three monotheistic religions are present in Jerusalem. What about the other two faiths? What kind of relations do you have?
We try to practice interreligious dialogue, but it remains on the high level of clergy and rabbis and muftis. We believe that the interreligious dialogue should go down to the grassroots and reach the different segments of people. But we started. Now we discuss, we have interreligious meetings.
With the Muslims as well, you mentioned the muftis.
On a high level, yes, on a high level. But still it didn't reach all the layers of the society.
Politically, the recognition of Palestine as a non-member observer state of the United Nations was welcomed here, no? Do you agree with that? Does it bring promise? It
brings hope for Palestinians to become one day a full state with all the privileges of being a state. But for the time being, no change was implemented on the ground. On the contrary, Palestinians are suffering from this decision because the tax money which is owed to Palestinians, due to Palestinians, is not given by Israel as a reaction against this decision. So practically $100 million every month should come to Palestinians from tax cut, but the last 2 months, this money didn't arrive. So we hope that situation will change and that Israel will accept one day the new change which happened, which took place in the UN.
The barriers, the physical barriers, are very shocking for someone who comes from outside. That creates mistrust and fear, no?
You know, what is more terrible is not only the physical wars, but the psychological wars of walls of hatred and mistrust. So all together will fall down. When the walls of mistrust and hatred will fall, I am sure the other physical, visible walls will also collapse. It takes time, but we pray for that.
Would you like to add anything?
I invite to continue to pray for the peace in the Holy Land. As Pope Benedict said in the homily of Christmas, peace is a divine gift.
Uomini secondo la tua immagine, e così uomini di pace.
So it is not a gift which will come to us from politicians. They will cooperate, but it is mainly a divine gift. And a divine gift is given through prayer and after prayer. So we have to pray strongly and perseverantly.
That was Auxiliary Bishop of Jerusalem, William Shamali, calling all of us to pray for peace in the Holy Land. The same call the bishops from the Holy Land Coordination made in their final statement, and a call which echoed Pope Benedict XVI's words during his apostolic visit to the Holy Land in May 2009. Quote, "Although walls can be built, we all know they do not last forever. They must be taken down. First, though, it is necessary to remove the walls that we build around our hearts, the barriers we set up against our neighbours." Unquote. Another of the guests present during this meeting, which took place on Tuesday 8th of January in the little town of Bethlehem, was Melkite Archbishop Elias Shakur from Galilee, who invited everyone present to visit the Christians there, Christians of Byzantine Rite tradition. Christians in Galilee, you were saying, have a crisis of identity.
Oh, we had a continued crisis since we turned to become minority since the creation of the State of Israel. And we have some minority problems that are threatening the very existence of the Christian Palestinian presence in the Holy Land.
Can you mention some of these issues?
Yes, I can. I don't want to emphasize on that, since I'm decided to wash our dirty laundry at home, not to put it on air for everybody to misunderstand or to badly understand what I said. I give you an example, for example. It's very simple. We have our private schools, and education in Israel is compulsory, which means the Ministry of Education has to pay the subsidies for the children in whatever school they might go. But Israel made an exception about the Christian schools. Not only they give us less than half the subsidies, but they continue squeezing that less and less subsidies to our schools. And we have either to close these schools or to struggle within ourselves to find ways to continue opening the schools, because these schools are not simple, normal schools. They are a place where Christians, Muslims, Druze, and others live together. This is our major way to be in touch with the young generation. In case we close, we'll have no way to contact the young generation, and they will grow up without almost any knowledge about Christ and about Christianity, and that pains us a lot.
There's a lot of focus on the Holy Land and on the holy places. You were saying that it's important for people to visit Galilee as well.
Well, the holy places are extremely important, and I'm grateful for all those Christians who were taking care of the holy places. But it's time to understand or to question what is the value of the holy places if there's no more Christians here. What's the importance of the holy stones if there are no more living stones? And I'm appealing for people, for Christians, if they come in pilgrimage, it's excellent. They can come, they are wanted to come, but visit the shrines, the stones, the antiquities, but give some sometimes to the Christians. They would love to welcome you. They would love to share a meal with you. They would not ask you for money. They will ask you for friendship and for solidarity. And they deserve that, I think.
Now we've listened to Melkite Archbishop Elias Shakur. I'd like to share with you a conversation with one of the bishops of the Holy Land coordination I got to know best. He's Frenchman Michel Dubost, Bishop of Evry, with whom I had spent a long time waiting to cross the border from the West Bank to the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan on a visit there which coincided with Epiphany. The Holy Land is all about borders and walls. Would you agree?
I do agree, but not only Holy Land. It is a kind of parable of our world. European Union, we tried to avoid the borders, but there are new borders coming. Rich and poor, people with culture and without. In my diocese, there is, people lacking of legal papers, identity cards, and you are to imagine always that the Christian had to cross the border. We waited a long time at Allenby Bridge, but it doesn't matter. We had to cross the border. And everywhere, we celebrate Epiphany here. And Epiphany is a feast of a world without border. And we had to anticipate as much as possible a world without border.
But there are also very visible borders here, though, with the wall, no? The wall, one sees the apartheid wall.
I try not to show my own borders in my own heart. And I think the visible just give an idea of the invisible border.
But when you see the wall, after all these years, you've been here many times, what do you feel? What emotions do you feel in your heart?
I understand that Palestinian and Israelian need security. And I listen to many Israelians telling me, you know, we need security. And they are right, they need security. But you cannot have any kind of security if you have no confidence in your neighborhood. And those walls seem to be technical way to have security. And there is no technique that can give security. It's a false idea to think that you have any kind of techniques that can prevent you from disaster. Only confidence, only the encounter with the other. You know, Christ tells us to love our enemy. I know that you had to prevent your enemy to do spiteful things, but at least there is no technical solution. There is only political solutions. And those walls are like a word that say we have no confidence. We don't want a political solution. And that's awful.
Thanks there go to the Bishop of Ivry in France, Michel Dubost, for sharing with us his thoughts. Finally, as you'll have noticed, there were no Israeli guests on this programme so far. So before we end, I'd like you to meet a young Israeli I met with the Bishop's delegation. He's Daniel Sherman, Director of International Relations at Betzalem, the Israeli Information Centre for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories. Betzalem in Hebrew means in the image of, and clearly refers to man being created in the image of God.
Yes, basically we try to focus on key issues that are important. So the separation barrier, which divides the West Bank or Palestinian population centers from Israel, is something that we've looked at quite carefully. We've looked at issues of torture and ill-treatment. We look at how minors are treated in detention. And by uncovering and drilling very deeply into the human rights issues and gathering very in-depth information, it's a way of trying to bring to the discussion amongst policymakers and thought leaders a way of solid information and solid analysis so that they can change the situation, so that we can bring about a change.
Would you like to mention some of the projects that you invented, which were quite innovative, no?
Sure. Well, one of our innovative projects is a video project. In the video project, we've distributed at this point 220 cameras and trained 220 Palestinians who are living in high-conflict areas to use their video cameras as a way of capturing evidence of human rights violations, either by Israeli defense personnel, by the military or the police, or by settlers and settler violence. Essentially, we take the video and serves as evidence to open investigations and for trials to bring people to justice. And it also brings what most Israelis tend not to see, these violations, very close into their homes through video that people see, they watch, and they see a humanizing element of Palestinians that's very difficult given the ongoing conflict that we have.
Do you have any contact with Palestinian similar organizations? Are there any?
There's actually a very full range. I mean, first of all, we work together with a broad community of Israeli human rights and civil rights organizations, and we do work together with Palestinian organizations as well. Sometimes we disagree on analysis, but we share our information, and we essentially trying to promote human rights norms, which are universal, and we think can help to bring peace and a greater sense of stability and justice to the region.
And my last guest today was Daniel Sherman, Director of International Relations at Betzalem, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories. And that's all I have time for on today's broadcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Laudetur Jesus Christus.